Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Specialist Phil and Will are back, and we are recapping the Traders season 3, episode number 10. We ended on a cliffhanger. Will, where are you going? What's happening? What's going to happen? I mean, what are we supposed to talk about? We didn't even get the seer. What is going on? What's happening? Tell me. I need information. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to talk about for 45 minutes to an hour. Somebody help.
Oh, 45 minutes to an hour. Phil, I think we'll be lucky if we hit 15 minutes on this podcast. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Especially because not that much else happened. Like, the promise of this episode was we're going to get this new role, roles that we had talked about in the off season, that we'd say, what werewolf roles could you bring into this game? That's a similar format, the seer being one of them. We were stoked to see how it played out. We got some comments last week about how it played off, or it played out in the UK version of the show, and maybe we'd see a tweet to that. Seems like they're going the same way. Just no payoff on that. And then just, I mean, we don't even get our final banishment where you know the identity of the banished player, which was also part of the promise of this episode, and a pretty lackluster challenge for a number of reasons. And then when your cast is only seven people deep, then you're really like the castle workings of like sneaking off and meeting. I think we even had some, I think it was Dylan and Ivar today. We're like, oh, well, there's only seven of us. So like, we can just kind of sit wherever and who really cares where we talk. And like the intrigue throughout, I was like very, like, I was kind of feeling this was a weak episode throughout, but then we're building this round table and the round tables have gotten particularly good. You know, the fewer people that are left in the game. And Phil, I know you said last week how the round table is like one of your least favorite part of the show. And like, I kind of wanted to push back on you there because I think it's far, far more interesting than Tribal Council is. I think Tribal Council is all theater, people trying to answer Jeff's questions and made up metaphors and allegories to please Jeff and say enough, not really say anything to the other players. And it's just kind of this facade. Whereas the round table at least delivers in that it is people face-to-face accusing each other of lying. And I think there is inherent drama always going to be at a round table. I don't really, when it gets more personal deeper later, yes, they are better. But I don't think the early ones are that bad. But for this one in particular to not actually get the result, and even, I'm not even that mad about the cliffhanger, Phil. I'm more mad that we don't even know what the tiebreaker is. And maybe we'll get that in the chat from somebody who watches an international version of this show. But to me, that's really where it's like, we have nothing to talk about because I don't know what the tiebreaker is. So what is the right move for Brittany here? Did she miss see something from Dolores looking over at Danielle? Like, we just, like, I don't know what we can go off here. And then to have the whole Seer role not even get paid off, this is easily one of the worst, probably the worst episode of the season, if not the entire franchise.
It's funny because the reaction on social media has been pretty strong. So we need to like,
really? You
know, yeah. I mean, look, if we're going to lose our viewers, good thing we made it to episode 10 before we lost them. Currently, Will,
what
Blake and
do
I are
people like that. About this episode?
Well, here, what here was we there? So, but Blake and I are currently going through that with Deal or No Deal Island because, man, the Dr. Will effect was real. Like, the amount of viewers we lost as soon as Dr. Will was eliminated from that game are insane. So here we are talking the traitors, and it seems like the Survivor fans are sticking around, right? It seems like the Survivor fans want to watch. There's a bit of a dip after Boston Rob, but I feel like for the most part, it's like, let's see how this goes. So if we lose everybody here, we lose everybody here, but we got to keep it real. The drama around that round table of will Danielle ultimately survive this, knowing that if Danielle survives this, her and Brittany essentially win, this game's over. There is no way Dolores isn't going to vote for them. I don't know why Dolores is on my TV if she's not going to vote for him. Like Dolores is playing this game in such a nonsensical way. I don't get it. And so when I sit there and I see this take place tonight, I'm like, okay, there is a lot riding on this. There's no doubt about it. If they're going to do a cliffhanger, this is the cliffhanger to do because there is so much riding on what takes place here. If it is Ivor who goes home, this game is over for the faithful because then Danielle and Brittany are just going to tell Dolores, let's vote out Gabby. Dolores will be like, yes, let's vote out Gabby.
Well, they
Gabby
get to murder home. Somebody too, right?
No, this is it. And then they just go straight into the end game.
Oh, there's no murder. Okay. Because yeah,
I don't believe really there was. Is a murder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that'd Alan be even said, this is the last time you find out if somebody is a faithful or a traitor. So,
right.
So this is what happens, right? And like, I sit there and I watch it and look, Am I sitting there going, oh, come on, tell me who went home? Yeah, of course. It's got that moment, right? It's got that big moment. But I agree with everything you're saying where it's like, we don't know the rules of a tiebreaker. Ivor feels so out of left field that this just feels like, okay, why is Dolores voting for Ivor? They think it's either Gabby or Danielle. Why is she voting for Ivor? How does this benefit her? I don't understand it. So that's a big confusion on my part. We didn't get into Dolores's head, so I have no idea what she's doing. The fact that the Seer wasn't paid off in this episode in any way, shape, or form sucks. Like, it really, really, really sucks. That's what we were excited about. That would be like them coming out next week and being like, okay, now we're not actually going to give you the answer to what happened at the round table. We're just going to show you a highlight episode. Like, it makes no sense. Like, you can't have that be the traitors. Nothing.
It's the Traitors finale next week, but we don't find out who wins. You need to like sign up for Peacock and we'll announce it 3 months from now.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what bothered me. Like the Seer role, I don't know what the rules of the Seer role are because Alan said, I'm not telling you guys until after we figure out what's going on with the round table. So I don't know what to expect. And also if the whole point of getting to the final five is that we're going to tell you that you don't get to find out who's a traitor and who's a faithful when this final five elimination ceremony happens, but then somebody gets to be the Seer and just see who one of the people is anyway, or that person's a faithful, which I think it will be Danielle ultimately, who's the Seer. And then Danielle gets to just be like, okay, well, great. I'm going to pull Brittany and we're going to be good. It feels like, why? Like, do it earlier in the game. I just don't understand. It feels not satisfying to me. So I'm bummed. I mean, I am bummed. It's a good cliffhanger. I want to know what happens. Okay, so anybody who's like, man, these guys are... I do want to know what happens. I just don't feel like it was handled the best way.
Yes, and it's a very good point about the Seer, where we get to Final Five and we're promised, okay, we're going to keep one of these roles hidden, and then we're now like kind of undoing that. We're adding more information to the game when there are so few people left. I do think that like final six would have been fine for this. It almost feels a little too late. Maybe final seven would have been the right time to do this, but this should have happened, I think, before the round table. No,
I thought that's what we were being set up to do.
Is there some flaw that we're not seeing, like in that it's game breaking? Because I mean, it does sound kind of game breaking in a way where, like, if a faithful wins this power of the seer, picks a traitor out, and then can just go to the round table and say, yeah, I looked at Phil. We had one-on-one. I won it. And he is a traitor. And that's it. And we go to the round table and we banish you. But that could still happen at final five. But I guess then there's some intrigue on whether I'm telling the truth or not, or like I could be a traitor. Or you could have someone come out of left field and just say, you know what? I won the power of the seer and I sat down with Blake and he was a traitor. And like someone could just make up that they won it because it is happening in private. So,
well, no, supposedly it was public knowledge in the UK version. Like who was it? Seems the like seer they're doing, public
it seems like they're doing this anonymously, no? Or do they tell the whole group who got the power? Because then it's like,
you I just think have they're to gonna tell the whole group person. Who won the seer.
See, that's even now less interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The most interesting part of this episode to me was Brittany's position of do I vote with Danielle or do I not? Mm-hmm. And it's also an emotional one, a moral one. It goes kind of beyond the show. I think we can all agree from a gameplay perspective, like it doesn't help you here to vote Ivor. Because if Ivor doesn't go, and like, you know, Dylan's not voting Ivor, you know, Gabby's not voting Ivor, like, you know, Ivor's not voting Ivor. So like, you know, the best you're going to do is tie. And then what? And then it's like Dolores is jumping out of Ivor out of nowhere. But that kind of makes sense for Dolores. Like Dolores has been all over the place, casting rogue votes, like not really being in with the group on these decisions. And so Danielle pretty much outs herself as a traitor. Sorry, am I going out here for a second?
Yeah, that was you. You said Danielle essentially outs herself as a traitor and then it cuts.
Yes, because if Danielle knows that one vote is 100% going Ivor's way, she then cannot throw a vote at Gabby and then eliminate Gabby in a majority. It would then be at best a 2-2-1 where Dolores gets the tie-breaking vote, which I guess maybe works, but it seems like at that point, Danielle's like, I'm so screwed. Let me at least throw a vote on somebody I know who's getting a vote. And then it's up to Brittany, who kind of throws her own game under the bus. I think Brittany voting for Ivor, who Ivor's had no suspicion on. Everyone thinks he's a faithful. I think there's a lot of suspicion on Brittany here as well. And I think it would have been so much smarter for Brittany's game to just like suck it up, vote for Danielle. Then it's like a traitor's out. It could be any of the five of you. You haven't been under that much heat. You actually have played a faithful game the entire time, all but one night. So like if anyone's looking for evidence, there hasn't been this compiled list of little small things you've done throughout the season that we see coming up with Danielle. So I think it's just because they're friends. And honestly, that's like, you don't want to see people playing this game because people are friends with each other. You want to see good gameplay. So, I mean, it's interesting, but that to me is like the most interesting part of the episode.
I feel like the smartest thing Brittany can do at this point is vote for Danielle, because I was thinking the same thing. So
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about initially.
I'm saying
let the whole group know.
Here's the thing though. If she votes for Danielle the first time and it ends up being a tie and she turns around and says, everybody, look, that was my friend. I wanted to vote with her. She's my girl. I could never write her name down. I've been telling you that all along. And then she turns around on the tiebreaker and she votes for Danielle. I think she saves herself, because now everybody's looking at Dolores, who randomly throws out Ivor's name and who hasn't been playing a cohesive game at all. They're all looking at Dolores as the remaining traitor, not Brittany. Plus, you've eliminated a Big Brother player who was now determined to be a traitor. Brittany comes out of this. If Danielle goes home here, Brittany wins the game. No question. In my opinion, no questions asked. Unless somehow the seer role comes in and totally ruins everything. But I really do believe that Brittany will win the game if Danielle goes home here. That said, if Brittany keeps her vote the way it is and Ivor goes home in whatever random chance way that we don't know, if Ivor goes home, Brittany and Danielle, in my opinion, are so obvious as traitors. Because they're working, or at least Danielle and Dolores should be. But the problem is Dolores, being that she's the actual faithful, I don't think she'll ever vote with Gabby and Dylan to eliminate Danielle when they get to this end game situation. So I think that this is like, I think that either way, the traitors are going to end up winning this season. I don't think we're going to get faithfuls, because you know, ultimately Dolores, I don't know what her plan is at this point. And because of that, I just, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know. I don't even know how to, I don't even know how to come up with a solution because it makes no sense. I feel like an idiot.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, that's often the case.
I'm telling you, but now I feel it. Normally I am, but I don't feel it. I feel it.
Right. Right. It's all coming together now.
Yeah, it took 33 years.
The tiebreaker of it all, I mean, I imagine it's not a rock draw scenario where the two people who are tied then become safe and it flips onto the other four and they play a game of chance, because that needs to be explained to those four players ahead of time, because that influences the way you vote. And that's why rocks are so great in Survivor, and why you see so few instances over. We're now into our 48th season here, and we've seen a rock draw happen three times,
right? Yeah, I think
just total. Three. And one of them wasn't even real. Like, one of them was the final four before they put final. Yeah, that shouldn't. I mean, maybe it wasn't a mistake, but they grew from and learned, like, hey, final four is probably too late for that sort of thing. A 2-2 tie is very common. We should have a different tiebreaker. But only two instances of an alliance actually being willing to go to rocks. And if that's the type of tiebreaker that we're going to, like, Brittany needs to know that. And then Brittany is more incentivized to flip onto Danielle. So I imagine that's not the tiebreaker. I imagine it is some game of chance between Ivor and Daniel, a more traditional tiebreaker in which the two people that are tied will have to, you know, break it some way to their, I mean, it seems like it would just be like some sort of randomness. But yeah, I mean, if Danielle goes, Brittany's still looking in a pretty good spot to win. And if Ivor goes, Danielle and Brittany are both looking in a pretty good spot to win.
What's the rule? Is there a rule in Werewolf on a tie?
That's interesting.
Because Mafia, there can't be a tie, right? I haven't played Mafia.
No, you can. I think it's like you need the majority in order to murder or banish somebody in all these games. Like, in order to really solidify it, you can't win with a tie. You can't like enact whatever goal, whether it be like murdering, killing, poisoning, whatever it be. I do believe maybe there is a revote in Werewolf, and at least the one night ultimate Werewolf, it's like if there are votes that haven't been accounted towards the tied parties. So like if it was a 2-2-1 in this case where Brittany and Danielle vote for Gabby and Dolores has the stray vote, then Dolores would then have to cast a tie vote. I think that's how it works for Werewolf. Are you looking this up right now?
I'm looking at Mafia, because that's what this is more based on. It's like it's up to interpretation. It's kind of like whatever you want. Either there's no elimination, all players are eliminated, random elimination, a tiebreaker round. But he specifically said random. So I was wondering if we might be able to get some sort of insight. But I mean, like, are we going to literally get a rock draw?
I think in some form. Like, I don't think this is going to be like a challenge of skill. Like, we're going to do a quick memory game or a quick like,
yeah,
deduction game or pattern recognition game or even a physical, like a minute to win it type challenge. I don't think that he literally said a game of chance. So it looks like, yeah, we're going to like maybe flip a coin. Like, I don't know.
Because part of me was wondering in this situation, would you punish the faithfuls for not picking the right person and say a faithful's eliminated? Or would you say a traitor's eliminated? But then you reveal, well, who's that? Like, one is a faithful and you're revealing what the other side is. So I don't know. Maybe they should have done the seer beforehand. I just feel like whatever this is, it is kind of a lackluster ending because, like, look, we haven't been the biggest fans of Danielle over the course of this season. But if Danielle goes home because of a tiebreaker and it's a random chance thing, like it is a coin flip and she goes home because she pulled tails, there's nothing more dissatisfying than the way Cerie Fields went home in Game Changers, no matter how many times people try to spin that differently. That's what this would kind of feel like. It's like, get a better tiebreaker alternative. In my opinion, there needs to be something good in here that is like, okay, well, the seer gets the power then. And who cares if Danielle's the seer, she gets the power.
Yeah. I mean, I think the rocks tiebreaker is good. Cause it, like, you basically want to do what you can to decentivize people tying. So like, that's why rocks are so good. Like here, you're not giving any incentive to the players to change their votes. If they're not going to be at risk, then why are they going to change their vote? They're going to change their vote after Danielle and Ivor make their pleas. It's like, no, they literally just voted. We have a great point from Noah.
We have
a great point from Noah here. He says, I guarantee you Danielle was voted out. If it was a tie again, the cliffhanger would have been at the 50-50 draw rather than at the vote. That feels like that makes a lot of sense.
That's accurate.
That feels like, yeah, I think Noah should be in front of one of these mics instead of us dummies.
Well, it's funny, Will, because I finally watched the Deal or No Deal Island season one finale, and that's exactly the same thing, because they leave it on the cliffhanger of Will, Boston, Rob beat Amy back, which should have tipped off in all our heads that, of course, he's not going to beat her back, because they would have done it as Will, Boston, Rob survive the case situation. So it's always like, what's going to be the further along? I think that's a really good point from Noah, and that's like good reality TV edit watching, because, yeah, if they're going to have that moment for the first time in Traitors history, we're drawing from a bag or whatever it is, you would think that's where you end. Like, that would be the dramatic moment. And then you open the next episode with, you know, the whole recap of the season leading right up to that moment of the final vote and them standing up. I mean, Noah Salmon might have just solved it for all of us. There might be no drama in this moment.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a counter argument to this where it's like the second vote. Like, if the 50-50 chance game, whatever we're doing, if that falls kind of flat, then maybe this reveal of another tie might feel, it just might make more sense as a more of a dramatic moment to open your episode than opening on like a womp womp 50-50 draw that may not play out as well. That might be the only counter argument to that, but I do agree it does seem likely. I think part of me that was thinking that it will remain a tie, one is that, like I said, the players voting aren't incentivized to change their votes, unless we are doing some sort of rock, draw, tie, which I don't think we are. And then, like, they really showed Brittany's reaction being so shocked by Dolores's Ivor vote, which is like, why would you be so shocked by that? Like, you really think Dolores was going to change her vote to Danielle? Like, why would you be shocked? But I guess Brittany in her head saw something, and then she really did look shocked. But we've been fooled by this before. And like, this was when we saw the murder in plain sight. Adam comes on here and we talked it through. Like, Tom has this huge reaction, and that's the one they show us. And we're all sitting here saying, well, obviously, Tom's the one that goes home. Well, guess what? He survived and they murdered Chriselle. So just because we see this like jaw-dropping reaction from Brittany, that's supposed to tell us that she accidentally switched her vote to Danielle, thinking that Dolores did and that she was just going to cover her own ass.
Yeah.
That's what the show, I think, is selling us. But because that's what they want us to think, then maybe she didn't. So
is it too obvious of a guffaw? I mean, really, Tom was just floored by Alan's outfit. That's all it was. There was nothing more to that. He was just like, damn, that's a nice fit. Like, I'm going to drop my jaw.
Yeah, I mean, and they have so many of these reaction shots. I mean, they have a camera locked, especially when you're down to a final six, final seven. Like, you have a camera locked off on each of these players. And whatever facial expression they do, you have that at your disposal to, you know, enter in here and trick the audience. So I do hear Noah's point. I think that's the strongest point. And I think that's more likely than not that Danielle was voted off and that Brittany did change her vote, which I do think. I guess for me, it's like, if you're going to change your vote, if it's a tie, just vote for Danielle initially. What is the difference there? You know, the best you're going to get is a tie. Like, that's the best you're getting, Brittany. What else do you want? And then you're hoping you can flip Dylan onto Ivor. Is that really what you're playing for? So if you're Brittany, just vote for Danielle initially, and then you don't have to like even leak this weird Ivor vote that actually makes no sense.
One of the biggest flaws with the Traitors as a game, other than the fact that it's an uneven game with like some Traitors and some Faithfuls, is that all these people do have these built-in relationships, and that gets lumped into their decision-making. I know people. So last week, obviously, I was very angry with, you know, very angry. I said it was disgusting that Danielle called Carolyn Forrest Gump. I still stand by that. I think it was disgusting. But a lot of people took that as like, oh, well, you just like don't know this. And then like some of the players on the season are saying that Danielle swearing on her grandkids crossed the line, blah, blah. Like, that's all bullshit. Like, swearing your grandkids, you're a traitor. Like, you have to play the game that you have to play the cards you are dealt. You can't get mad. Like, Will, if you and I go into that game And the two of us are like, hey, man, we're going to play together beforehand. But then all of a sudden it's like, Will's a traitor because that's the card he got dealt. I'm not going to be like, well, Will, you lied to me for 14 days, so I'm never going to talk to you again because you're a dick. It's like, that's the game. You have to understand that coming out. So it's like, it's not the fact of Danielle being viewed as what do you call it? Like, as a, oh, she swore on her grandkids and went against it. It's like, well, she has to play as a traitor because she's a traitor. But I think the nonsense of all of this is Danielle and Brittany were friends beforehand, so they can't vote for each other. And Dylan says it tonight, Danielle, there are people sitting at this round table who will never vote for you. And that's crazy to me because, like, you can't go into this game 100% trusting anybody because literally you don't know whose shoulder Alan is going to touch. So that's where this whole nonsense of I can't vote for my girl Danielle, and then Brittany turns around and if she does vote for her anyway, it's like the fake theatrics of that whole opening. It's just vote for Danielle because that's the game. Danielle shouldn't have been a traitor then.
Yeah, I think it cuts both ways. Like, I think the interpersonal relationships and especially like the past histories of these relationships, like, they do play a role. And I find that to be interesting because it weighs this dilemma on the players. Like, do I play for better gameplay or do I play like to my moral conscience and my friends? Which, like, yes, I'm with you. Like, you want to see the better gameplay, but it is a TV show and you do want to know these people personally. And we do like to see these dilemmas whenever. Like, whenever we sit down to play one of these games, Phil, whether it be like Werewolf or Secret Hitler or the Resistance or anything, especially if we're playing, you know, with our significant others or like just with other couples, a lot of times it's like anything goes here. Like, do not take any of this as reality. We're just playing a game for fun because people will be like, I swear in our relationship, like, I would never lie to you. And then it's like, well, okay, is that crossing the line? But like, you have to lie. That's the whole point of the game. That's the role, like you said, that's the card that you've been dealt. And so we usually, when I play these games, have like a kind of precursor, like, all right, like anything goes, like, do not let this affect outside relationships. Yeah. Sitting down to play a board game. But at the same time, even when we play those games, like, we are, you know, we're still all humans. And I think sometimes what comes out of that is not even like you lied to me. It's that you lied to me and I didn't know you were capable of lying that well. And I've never, like, I thought I knew your tells, but now that we've played this game, this silly game of One Night Ultimate Werewolf, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you play that a few rounds and it's like, wow, the person who is, you know, my partner in life, I cannot tell whether they're lying to me or not. And that can, like, be kind of a big deal. I know, like, look, Brittany and Danielle aren't like dating or anything, but they are good friends.
Well, and Jesse says,
and like,
that
there either. there is something to the human element of this game.
Yeah, because Jesse says if Brittany screwed over Danielle before and got a lot of shit for it, I think Dylan knows that. And I think that's weighing on this. I don't remember which season it was, but people have talked a lot about how Brittany screwed over Danielle out of winning. And I think it might have been Reindeer Games or something like that. I don't know because I didn't watch Big Brother, but that seems to be, I think that's when they played together or whatever. And I think that, you know, those types of past relationships are weighing here because Brittany's like, I can't do this to Danielle again. But at the same point, like, you're still playing the game of the traitors and the best way for you to win is to win. Like, I don't know. I mean, it also, like, we've never played it with these stakes. So like you said, you go into these games with your significant other, your friends, whatever, it's anything goes. We haven't played for these stakes though. Normally that's for like, okay, we played One Night Ultimate Werewolf. The damn clock went down by 5 minutes and then we all forgot about it. And we reshuffled the roles and said, should we include something different this time? So with the stakes a little bit higher, maybe that's why it means a little bit more. But at the end of the day, if you're a faithful, you still have to play as a faithful. And if you're a traitor, you still have to play as a traitor. So I do think, like, in this situation, I think Brittany's a little caught off guard because she was just pulled in by Danielle because Danielle's extending that olive branch again. I think it was super ugly after Reindeer Games where, like, they literally didn't talk to each other. And now she's being put in this position. But honestly, Brittany, Danielle should have played better then. Like, you can't tank your game just for the sake of Danielle had heat on her. Like, Danielle has a player in Dolores who is not making a logical decision. And still Danielle can't get the numbers. So if that's the case, like, you have to do what's best for your game.
Yes, we do also have to remember, though, that, like, at this point, Brittany and Danielle are on the same team.
Yeah.
Like, sure. And it probably helps Brittany if Danielle is sitting there at Final Five, because I mean, I know they don't reveal who's a traitor and who's not, but because Danielle has so much heat on her, if they're somehow able to get rid of Ivor here through a 3-3 tie in this random game, and I'm sure the players do know what the tiebreaker rule is, they should. It's crazy that we as an audience don't. I think we should too. But if they somehow get Ivor out, then you're heading into this whole Seer thing and Final Five and the Circle of Truth with Danielle there. You know Danielle is not surviving that with how much heat she has from everybody else. And that ups your chances of winning the game by quite a bit. So there is an argument to be made that getting Ivor. And then look, then if Danielle goes out and it's a 3-3 tie and she's gone anyway, then it's like, no, nah, it's not too much sweat off your back. You see what I mean there?
I do. So here's my question. What happens? Oh, I guess true, because they throw in the rocks, and as long as one person wants to vote, they have to vote. So, because I was going to say, like, what happens if we get down to the Final Five and Dolores says, like, well, I'll vote for Gabby with you guys. And then they vote for Gabby and Gabby goes home. They don't find out what she is, but they assume she was a traitor. And then they all just then Danielle and Brittany have evened up the numbers. But I guess then Dolores or Dylan / Ivor, who are still there, could throw in a rock and say, I want to vote again. And then you vote somebody yes, out of the game.
But then it's a 2-2 or 2-1-1 at that point. Because at that point, sure. I think Brittany and Danielle, if they're both standing there, are going to be voting together.
So really at this point, if Brittany can get through this with Danielle, and I'm thinking of this, I do believe that Brittany's going to vote for Danielle here, but let's say she doesn't, just for argument's sake. If Brittany gets through this vote with Danielle, they get the Final Five, and the argument to Dolores from Brittany is, yes, I agree with you, Danielle is a traitor, but let's vote for Gabby first because I think she's also a traitor. You get rid of Gabby, Gabby goes, now Brittany and Danielle win together, and I think Dolores would fall for that. So really, Brittany...
I think all three would vote Dylan at the end, and I don't think they reveal the identity once you get to the Circle of that Fire.
Starting this season, they don't, yep.
Then it's them three. It's Dolores, Brittany, and Danielle, and that's a double traitor win right there. Two traitors winning it. But we think that Danielle's going home here.
I do.
So then, now how does the finale play out? I guess, and that's the thing. The Seer is such a big variable because we don't even know who's getting the Seer role, and even if we did, we don't know who they'd pick. I mean, we could at least have some fun speculating that, but it's just a complete question mark here that kind of doesn't, you know, whenever we do a Survivor, you know, pre-show before a finale, it's like we are talking about every damn jury vote possible for every combination of the final three and getting very nitty-gritty. Here I feel like it's even more difficult because we have no idea what's going to happen with the Seer.
Yeah, we don't know. And so my question is, if Danielle did win the Seer, but Danielle goes home, does the Seer go to the next highest person or is the Seer just out of the game? Probably go to the next highest person, right?
I think it's so lame if that's the case, but I think it would have to, right?
Because they want it in the game.
The whole challenge was built around the Seer role. If you never introduced that role, it's kind of like... what was the point of that whole segment, which is kind of like a lot of the challenges anyway.
The doll thing I don't get, man. I don't get the doll thing, but maybe that's just me.
Do you want to talk through this challenge?
Yeah. Can you give me insight into why the doll thing was good to go, where like everybody had different varying?
Well, what was your problem with the doll thing? Because I think there were multiple. I think my issue with the doll thing is different than your issue with the doll thing.
Well, I have two issues with the doll thing. One, because it's public, everybody's hearing what everybody else's is. My bigger issue, though, is like everybody has a different highest amount they can get to, and that was done at complete random. So I almost feel like, doesn't this challenge work better if they go into the dollhouse and pull the doll, and then Alan either announces that they got money or didn't get money? Like, he can still announce it, but they don't necessarily know how many times they pulled the string, because Danielle was able to go to 2,000. Ivor couldn't go over 1,400.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with randomizing the dolls. I think that's part of the interest. This is a push your luck mechanic, and that, you know, some of these are going to, it's like Hot Potato, you know, or like they have expiration dates. When you play Hot Potato or any like electronic game like that, like the timers are not all set to 30 seconds or else there's no fun. There's no game. It can't be every single doll is on the third or fourth pull.
Yeah.
It's, you're too greedy. Like they have to have variants. And I think you randomize it and that's totally fair as long as the randomization was done fairly. And I trust that it was. The weird part was that like the first pull got everyone up to $1,200. It's like everyone was just starting with $1,000 and that the $500 that, who was it? Gabby and Brittany
Dolores, won in the, right?
Was it Dolores? It's almost as
Danielle,
if like,
Danielle got 500 in the first one because she didn't push
Danielle, her but it's like, didn't somebody get like 1,200 or maybe it was confusing because I never got to see
it. So in the first challenge, in the first section, two people got 1,000, two people got 500, two people got nothing.
Okay.
That's how it went in the first section.
And then I guess we never got this. Did we ever get to see the totals added from the dolls? Were they all? It was just weird. They started at 1,200 and it felt like, was this adding on or was the doll giving you your current total?
No, it was starting. Everybody started at 1,200. Like it wasn't the money that you had banked. Everybody was at 1,200.
Okay. I mean, that's how it should be. That would make the most sense. But then we never get to see the leader. Like, I didn't think, did they show a leaderboard going into the third round? So like that wasn't clear. And then the coins, we have no idea. So it's like, we're in the dark in two back-to-back rounds. And the only information, I know we could add it up ourselves, but like, yeah, I don't know if this challenge, I mean, the clown part two, did you enjoy that? Like, that's one of those games you see at a Jumbotron at like a baseball game or an NBA game. And it's quite fun. You get to actively play along, and then the MC calls out which one is, and the crowd's yelling. You hear a section going A and one going B, and it's fun. But when you do this on a TV show and you're kind of intercutting around the different dance moves, and like the clowns did a good job. They're moving cool. They're scary. They're fun. But there was not much play along. Like, did you try to track any of these clowns and see which, like, you really couldn't play the game, and that's what makes this game fun. So that was like kind of a womp womp. And then I don't mind the push your luck aspect of the dolls. I was just like, why are we starting at $1,200 when we just had, it just felt like a weird jump to me that now it felt like the first round really lost a lot of the significance. And that does happen a lot on round based challenges, especially when you're adding to a prize pool. It's like every game show, every Family Feud.
If you ever play like Slingo or something, it's nonsense.
Just like play round three and you can literally score 0 points in the first two rounds. Yeah. But round three is the double triple bonus round. Yeah. And it's like, well, it kind of makes rounds one and two meaningless. And that's kind of what I felt here.
I get that. I think what I would have liked more also is like everybody started with 12. They pulled the string and everybody went to 14 next. I almost would have liked if the increments were different too, because then that also adds an element of randomness. And like you were talking, if the randomization is accurate, is fair, which we're assuming it is, it's like, okay, you could have 12, you could skip to 16, you could pull on the next one and go to 2000 and then pull on the next one and be done. And somebody else could go from 12 to 14 and then pull again and go to 18. And like, I would have liked if there would have been like a little bit of difference in the amount rather than just like 12, 14, you're either dead or 16, you're either dead or 18, you're either dead or 2000. Cause that's another thing I feel like you can game, right? Like if you figure out, okay, Ivor's capped out at 14, Danielle capped out at 2000, you know, I'm going to fall some 2000's the highest you can go, which I thought Dylan Ephraim would have figured out, but he didn't because he tried to pull it after 18.
Dylan's pull. There was some very questionable pulls where it's like, all right, you have enough money. Why are you risking? Like, you know, the increment is $200,
yeah,
and you have $1,800 already. Like, what is $200 going to get you versus going all the way down to zero? Like, you don't have positive expected value on another pull, even though you don't truly know the odds. You know them probably well enough not to make an additional pull.
And like you said,
unless Dylan didn't want it, maybe he was just throwing it.
No, he said he wanted this year. He said he didn't want Danielle to get it. But the third round is normally the highest round. So especially then, it's like take your 18, you're down 700 to Danielle, go into the last round where you're going to assume you can make up the biggest difference. Like that's how all these games always work. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and did they tell us the amount that the coins were worth?
They were only 100 each, which I thought was low.
do we know how many total coins there were?
No, and we don't know how many were in each bag or anything.
Yeah. I mean, it was just hard to follow. And we like we do a challenge with a secret winner and we don't even know this episode. Yeah. I do think Dylan's read on Danielle really wanting to win was a very astute read. That might have been the most interesting part of the episode. That we've talked about these shields and these challenges, that they make the challenges more interesting. They're playing for something. But at the end of the day, if you are a trader, you want to win the challenge. You should be at least pretending to want a shield just as much as a faithful does, because that is your goal as a trader. You want to pretend to be a faithful. So it doesn't really change your behavior. But here, it's almost a trader has more incentive to win this than a faithful does, because a trader, their whole game can be blown up if the wrong faithful wins this and picks them for the face-to-face meeting. Whereas like if a faithful doesn't win this and they're called for the meeting, then it's actually good news. Like, great. Everyone knows I'm a faithful. I can now get, and we're like, you know, we're at final six here. So I can go to the end, the circle of truth, and no one's going to kill me unless, you know, it's due to personal relationships. So I thought that was quite clever, that this is a rare challenge in which the traders and faithfuls actually kind of have different incentives, or you can pick up on the behavior more than you would for, say, just a shield.
Yeah. And I feel like Dylan saying that with Danielle, she really wants this so bad. She wants this so bad. It's so evident to me. I wonder if any of the other players were picking up on that. And that's also a part of it that makes me think that Danielle probably goes home here, because they're showing Dylan being more astute. And I feel like they want us to realize like Dylan's more astute. Like they really gave, I don't know, like they could have shown the reasoning for a tie and maybe that's why they did it. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like they're showing him being smarter than they're showing a lot of the other players.
I mean, I feel like at this point, the show wants you to root for Dylan to get rid of, like, assuming Danielle goes here, like have Dylan sniff out Brittany and win. Like that's kind of the goal, but he's going to have to win with somebody, right? I don't think you can win as a sole faithful. Is that even possible?
We didn't see it last. The only time we've seen a faithful win was Trishelle and CT together.
Right. But I don't even think within the format rules of the game, it's possible to win as a sole faithful, right?
Yeah. Cause when you get down to final two, that would just be what it is. You're right. So you would just split with two. Yep.
You're always going down to two, and a trader can win solely if it's one trader and one faithful, but if there's two faithfuls, no way. So
yeah, because that was the whole thing with voting out MJ somebody last season. Yeah.
Dylan and somebody. I mean, who does he want to split the money with, I wonder?
Probably Ivor. Which may be why Dolores wants to go after Ivor.
Yeah. Would you
let me just ask this. If you get to that end game, Danielle goes home here. You get to that end game and you're Dylan and you're Ivor. Are you letting any of the women get through that? Or are you just trying to vote out the women?
You can try, but they outnumber you.
They do outnumber you. But what I'm saying is, like,
work with the women at some point to initially eliminate one of them.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if I'm Dylan if I ever rest saying, okay, I feel good now about Dolores, or I feel good about Gabby, or I feel good about Brittany. I feel like you want to get rid of all of them and get to a final two of you and Ivor. I think that's what you would want.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about? We've actually gone quite a while here. We've milked out this episode.
We've done this before.
I know. What did you think about the murder of Tom versus the not murdering Ivor, or not murdering Dylan?
No, we thought it was going to be Dylan. We talked last week about it being Dylan. Yeah, because it seems like Dylan was the most onto things.
He's like one of the most obvious faithful. There's quite a few. It's not like that there was only one, but then he's also the sharpest. But like they both are just saying like, oh, we love Dylan. He's our guy. When did Dylan become best friends with everyone in the house and we never saw it? Yeah. Like we did, like Brittany and Dylan being like best buds all of a sudden. That shock. Like that's brand new. This is brand new information.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seemed like what ultimately got Tom eliminated over Dylan was exactly why we thought Dylan would go home, which is that Tom was on to Danielle and Dylan wasn't. So Danielle gets rid of the person who's on to her rather than getting rid of the person who's not on to her. And I do think had they gotten rid of, what's funny is, had they gotten rid of Dylan, Tom probably pushes hard on Danielle, or maybe he still just votes Dolores, but it's probably Tom and Danielle.
You leave Tom in there. You kill Dylan or Ivor. I think they're both more faithful and more, like, they're just less likely to go, like, sniff in the wrong direction. Ivor has been very sharp as of late, and we know Dylan's been sharp. Tom, yeah, I think he was on to Boston Rob, but we've seen him fire so many miscalculated guesses, and his main target in Dolores is still in the game. So you're almost like guaranteeing there's going to be this Tom versus Dolores that you're like throwing a couple votes away, and maybe you can swing one of them on your side. It just makes it easier for you if there's another war being happening, not taking place with your names involved, that Dolores is saying, you know, it's Tom. And Tom is convinced it's Dolores. Like, that's what you absolutely want as a traitor. So I do think this was a big whiff on who they decided to murder.
Yeah, I mean, there's a comment in here from Noah that says if they kept Tom, they could have done a 3-2-1 to save Danielle, because they know Tom and Dolores would have voted for each other, which is what was happening. I mean, they really were just going after each other nonstop. People weren't taking Tom all that seriously. So, I mean, I don't get the Tom murder. I really don't. I thought for sure Dylan was done, and then Dylan's the first one to walk in. And what it came down to was, when Brittany got there, she said to Danielle, Gabby and Tom are on to you. And Danielle went into defensive mode and said, okay, well, I guess we're going to get rid of Tom. And then who does she push for? She pushes for Gabby. And ultimately, had Dolores not said, I'm voting for Ivor, they would have voted for Gabby. That's where Brittany and Danielle wanted to.
And it would have been a 3-2-1.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But Dolores made it so apparent she was voting for Ivor that they didn't have a choice but to go that route.
Yeah. And again, that really kind of outs not only Danielle, but also Brittany potentially. I really think Dylan is wise enough. If Dylan somehow is able to win this game and eliminate Brittany after we think Danielle is going to be eliminated here, I think in large part it will be due to Brittany initially voting for Ivor, being like, why in the hell did Brittany vote for Ivor out of nowhere? I think that really could cost Brittany her game.
Yeah, especially if Danielle goes right here, because then it's like, Danielle was a traitor. Brittany, you defended her that hard. Dolores, you defended her that hard. Gabby, sit down, vote with Dylan and Ivor. Like, that's Dylan's pitch.
There you go. There's your three.
And depending on who gets the seer, depending on who gets the seer, I mean, the only reason I'm assuming Danielle wins is because she had 2,500, but I know Brittany was in it. Everybody was pretty much in it except for Gabby and Dylan. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Was there anything else? I don't know if there was anything. I mean, we dragged that. We did a hell of a job.
I think so. I mean, with not knowing who's getting banished, not knowing who the seer is, we don't have a murder coming up. This is like the traitor is no more turret here. So not a lot. And we chewed through some of the possibilities for the finale. So
who do you want to win? Like, who are Dylan. You rooting for? You want Dylan.
Like, I do think Danielle's drawing dead here. Like, if she somehow survives this, if we do get a 3-3 vote and Ivor goes home in the random chance, I think Danielle is like 100% going home at the final five round table. Yeah. And then it just becomes whether Brittany can win or not. And like, do we want Brittany winning as a traitor when she's been a traitor for one episode, I guess two episodes
from last season? Yeah.
Like, it's like, you just don't, it doesn't feel satisfying. Mm-hmm. And that's probably better for the show. Like, you want, like, when a traitor wins, you want them to be at least, I mean, maybe not a day one traitor all the time, but at least like come in fairly early to come in at final seven as a traitor. That's not who you want to win. So what about you? Are you in the same boat?
No, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I'd like to see Dylan. Honestly, I'd like to see Gabby. Gabby owned. I don't, like, for all you Danielle fans who made it 47 minutes, Gabby owned Danielle at that round table tonight. Every response in her like high-pitched kind of ditzy voice of just like, same, yeah, me too.
I could say the same thing.
It was so good after what Carolyn did last week, where Carolyn was so all over the place and Gabby was just like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. And it was just, I loved every second of that. I was so into that. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be mad if Gabby won. I wouldn't be mad if Dylan won. If Ivor wins, that's just kind of funny. at this point, because kind of they put the British aristocrat in, and it's like he just wins the game. But in terms of, I don't know, in terms of Danielle or Brittany, I'm much happier if Brittany wins than if Danielle wins, even though, like, you know, you're talking Brittany's a traitor for however long. I just find Brittany to be more likable on TV. Like, I'm not finding Danielle to be all that entertaining. Like, I understand that she has her stands. Go ahead and stand who you want to stand. I didn't grow up watching Danielle, so I find her to be too much. I find her to be so over the top. And it's not because she's a villain. It's because I literally just find her antics to be so showman-y that I'm just not into it.
Yes, and I think for as well of a job, as good of a job, as Danielle did last week with Carolyn, when she did have all the answers. I mean, she still did a very good job. Mm-hmm. This week, it's like it's in stark contrast because she was so poor. Like, her arguments were not objective, evidence-based arguments like they were for Carolyn. Like, she had all these, like, lists of things that Carolyn had said and done, especially the chess challenge that she was pointing to, whereas her argument tonight was this emotional one of, like, I could never be a traitor. I would never do that. And you're known as, like, a villainous Big Brother player. Like, of course you would be. Why wouldn't you be? It's a TV show. Like, it was such a poor argument that she wasn't picking apart Gabby's game. She was just saying, I can never lie and be a traitor. Yeah. It's like, what kind of argument is that? It's like, if we were to play Werewolf or the Resistance, and I'm like, I'm not a werewolf. I can never do that. I would never be a werewolf. It's like we randomly shuffle the cards and dealt them. Like, you can. Yes, you can be a werewolf because that's how the game works. Okay. Danielle, you're a reality star who played a competition show. You absolutely can be a traitor. There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to do this. So I thought her arguments, and of course the show's edited. These roundtables go on for much longer than we see, but it didn't really it didn't feel like she really had any real evidence that she could use to pin it on Gabby. It's something that was more objective and, like, really putting Gabby on blast. Like, it was just kind of, Gabby, I think it's you because it's not me.
And in this game, if somebody looks you in the eye and says, I know this because I'm a faithful, or I'm a faithful, and looks at you,
it's like, just not an argument.
They're lying.
But like,
have an argument there, I feel like. Because she said that to Gabby tonight. She's like, well, I am a faithful. And Gabby's like, yes, same. Like,
yeah, so everyone's saying that.
I'm a faithful.
Yeah, I guess the one piece of evidence, objective evidence that was used was actually, like, coming from Brittany when she said, you kind of hung out with your clique. It didn't feel like you needed to get to know a lot of people and form connections. And that could be a sign of someone who feels protected and that they can't be murdered because they are a traitor. And I thought that was somewhat compelling, but Danielle did not take that and run with it and add to it and say, well, you also did this challenge. You, when this person got murdered or this person's votes, like, she tried it a little bit on her own game. Like, I voted for Boston Rob twice, but then Gabby goes same. So, and then her final case was, like, please, I'm not a traitor. Like, that doesn't work. You can't just say you're not a traitor. You need something more. And the worst part was she'd already proven that she could make a very compelling case. Literally the night before, she proved that she had the chops to, you know, put together a case that a lawyer could make. That was not that tonight.
Yeah.
So, I agree. I think that's it, Phil. I think unless you have any closing thoughts here.
No, I'm good. So next week's,
like, the finale. I didn't hate this episode. I just think it was the worst episode of the season. I think
you literally said it could be the worst of the franchise.
It could be, though. I mean, the ending was so lame. Like, to not get any sort of payoff. I'm, like, really surprised we talked about it for this long. But that's what we do.
Well, anyway, we're back next Thursday. That's the finale. We're probably only recapping the episode. I don't know if we're going to recap. I don't know if we need to do, like, the live reunion. I think we watched the reunion last year, but, like, I don't know.
I think we watched the episode and we recapped right after while the reunion was, like, on.
Yeah, and I think I might have watched the reunion.
I never went back to watch
Andy Cohen. Like, she loves Andy Cohen. So I think that's why we watched it after. But so we'll be back recapping next week. For everybody who's fans of Survivor, go check out all our Survivor coverage. Will got his thoughts in today on our Digging Deeper episode. So you got a recap and a Digging Deeper episode in there. A whole bunch going on there. Australian Survivor's coming out early next week. Deal or No Deal Island will be coming out early next week. I'll be live with Rome at, man, I can't get this time right. We're going to do noon Eastern on Sunday, myself and Rome, for our Survivor episode 2 predictions and power
rankings. Having deja vu.
I know you're hearing this a second time. And then become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. A whole bunch of stuff going on over there. You can go check out all the tiers and what they have to offer and everything like that. We've had a lot of signups, so thank you everybody who has been. We appreciate it. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. We'll see how this cliffhanger ultimately pans out next week. So see you all next Thursday if you only follow us for the trader stuff. And hopefully we're smiling and in a good mood at the start of the episode instead of whatever we started with our first 4 minutes today. Bye, everyone.
See ya.